people are also still learning like how to make sense of their data. And maybe they haven't been able to utilize the data they have to the extent that they'd like. And sometimes that is limitations with reporting.
Insights by Design podcast, where we take your data to Eureka. Today we're lucky to have Matt Mike, a fellow Phoenix resident, joining us today, and we're excited to learn from Matt and his expertise around data visualization, dashboard design, and driving business value. Matt, how are you doing?
Great. Excited to be here. Thanks for having me on, Andrew. We've known each other in the LinkedIn space for a little while now. It is our first time talking face-to-face, albeit virtually, and glad to be chatting today. Glad to be on the pod.
That's great to have another Phoenix person in the ecosystem. Indeed. Phoenix has a surprisingly deep data community.
That's what I'm learning. There's more people here than I thought. Even a partner in my AI consultancy lives here in Phoenix. And we met for a beer one night before we decided to start working together. And we just met over LinkedIn. So it's cool to get connected with the local data community too. Yeah.
That's right. Opportunities coming up. Matt and I will be hosting a low-key happy hour for the Phoenix crowd in the next few weeks. Details to come, so be on the lookout for that.
Excited about that.
Matt, for the few people living under a rock, mind just giving a quick intro into yourself and what you're up to?
Thank you. I am working as a Power BI developer, or that's what I've been doing. And just a little bit about me. I graduated college with an English degree, went into teaching for a charter school here in Phoenix, and did that for a few years, became an administrator as a dean of students, decided education wasn't for me, had a short stint in B2B sales. I was thinking, oh, I'm going to make a lot of money. It's going to be great. And just found that I hated direct sales, especially in a B2B environment. Only lasted 6 months before I was so miserable. I just decided that definitely wasn't for me. And then I got into corporate business operations, first as an associate, again, worked there for a couple of years, became a supervisor. And that's when I really got my introduction to tools like Power BI and even Tableau. We mostly worked in Excel, but we had some teams that used Tableau. And I had it in my mind to become like the resident Excel expert of our department, and like took a bunch of courses and tried some different initiatives, implementing certain things. And then that kind of was the gateway tool in the tools like Power BI and Tableau. Got my hands on Power BI and just implemented some reports with my team. Had about 7 people on my team, and just had some like simple KPI reports for our weekly meetings. And I started to discover what data analytics was in the LinkedIn space, just from other content creators. Started learning tools like SQL and getting better at like those data viz tools. And there was a business analyst position that opened at the company I was working with. I applied for it, but it was super competitive. There was like, they did 20 internal interviews for it or something like that. And I didn't get it. So I was just looking outside the company, got a business analyst job somewhere else, did that for a while, and then started working as a Power BI developer for another company. And that has been my thing ever since. So that was a contract position that just ended. In December, I started a Power BI consultancy with a buddy of mine that I met on LinkedIn, Alex Von Reich. And so I'm focusing on that right now a lot, not really in a rush to go back to anything full time, though I've just been staying open to things, but working with a few clients there, that's been really exciting, and slowly but surely trying to get that to grow, hoping that'll grow. But it's been an exciting journey. I've had a really interesting professional background, but I've loved data analytics with all the different things I've done in my background. That's been the most fun and the most interesting thing that I've done. Because of that, I've been able to just build a presence on LinkedIn and meet tons of amazing people like yourself and like my co-founder, the consultancy. And it's been great. It's been an awesome ride. I love the data community. And it's just opened up so many opportunities for me that I never would have had otherwise. And it's a ton of fun.
I'm with you. You've got such a varied background, which I love. Having a non-traditional background can be a superpower. Are there any lessons that you learned from your former careers that you feel like gave you an edge as a data analyst?
That's a really great one. When I got my first official data job, I'd say there was a degree of analytics involved when I was an operations supervisor, especially with the tools I was using. But when I became a business analyst, one of the reasons I was hired was because of the domain knowledge that I had. So I was more specifically in the billing and collections department. And that role was supporting the credit collections department. And they had interviewed, I was told by my VP that they had interviewed people more technical than me, but I really understood the business. And that gave me an edge over the competition. I had a portfolio, but honestly, like as much as I talk about portfolios, that for that role, they didn't even look at it. They just really liked my background. And I think even the experience I've had as like a dean of students, that was some great leadership experience that's just helped me to communicate, work with teams really well, just be dependable in my role and trustworthy. So it's one of those things where if I had worked my whole career as an analyst, I'd probably be in a different spot now. But I think because of the background I've been able to have, it really served me well in my transition into analytics. I think it probably would have taken longer if I didn't have the background that I had. And what's great about analytics is a lot of people come from a lot of different backgrounds, but those backgrounds can be so varied that it can take people different lengths of time depending on that experience. So ultimately, I'm really grateful for the background that I've had. Technical skills are great, but you can glean so much from any kind of work experience. And we're fortunate enough to be in a field that's very open-minded and that'll accept people from all walks of life as long as you do have the technical skills down. Yeah, I'm grateful for my background. I think it's served me well. A lot of that experience even came around when I got my role, my more recent role as a Power BI developer. They loved like the operations supervisor experience that I had and that I had some leadership experience because that role, I didn't have anyone reporting to me, but I did a lot of training on the team. I was supporting a non-technical team. And so there was SQL and Power BI trainings that I did for the team, but I had to support building scripts and reports through Power BI, of course. So it's been great. Yeah. And I think I'm right where I need to be with the background I've had and the experience I've had up to this point.
I think your leadership background is super helpful in both the being in a corporate industry job, but also as a consultant, where even though as a consultant, everybody's your boss, you're expected to come prepared with leadership, ideas, insights, and to deliver value in meetings and not just be an observer. Being a leader is helpful in that. I think data analysts are, in tech in general, often misserved when they're promoted into leadership, because it's, oh, you were a great individual contributor. You crushed it as a data analyst. How about you lead a data analytics team? It's a different skill set. Now you're a product or a project manager. You're leading people. You're managing priorities. Or previously, maybe you were given more work to do and you had a smaller circle of responsibility. But then as a leader, it's a different ballgame. Okay, I need to make these connections across the enterprise. I need to voice my opinions and make sure that we're driving for something that makes sure that my team doesn't get stuck in a tough position where they're not going to be able to deliver value, which is a whole other skill set outside of being an individual contributor. But you also have to know those technical skill sets, right?
Yeah. And I think what you said there and how you build with other teams. When I was a business analyst, especially, so I was like a siloed analyst supporting the department. So similar, I've never actually worked on a data team. I've worked with data teams, but I've never been on one. And that's been both good and bad, right? You don't have the same level of mentorship, but forces you to learn a lot on your own and be independent. But when I was a business analyst, I did have to be very proactive in how I connected with other teams. So I would talk with our data engineer almost every day. I'd be talking with the supervisors and I'd be translating a lot of the technical and non-technical jargon between teams. I was meeting with VPs on other teams, and the VP that I reported to really depended on me to be independent, to really have a full grasp on these reports and initiatives that we were developing, and to be connected to these other teams, find out what they need, communicate, and get the requirements for whatever we needed to do. If we were stuck somewhere, like being able to go to like the engineering team or the more technical teams and figure out the solution we need. And so I think that leadership background was like, because they knew that that's what the role required, I think that's one thing that stood out to them. And it's funny because one of the reasons too I went into data is I wanted a job where I could be an individual contributor, but make more than I was making as a leader. And so I'm happy I was able to achieve that. But like right now, like I have no, just me personally, I have no desire to be like an analytics manager or anything like that. I had my time being like a business leader and it was great. Don't want to go back to it right now, but I love being able to advance in my career and do new and cool things while not having to lead a team. So just another thing about data that's pretty cool, because there's a lot of industries, and I've experienced them, where you hit an income ceiling unless you go into leadership. So like when I was an operations supervisor, there's literally just like associate, then supervisor. There's business analysts, but they're on other teams and they did make more. But everyone was trying to be a supervisor because it was like you either stay an associate and get paid very little in comparison, or you go into leadership. So everyone just wanted to go into leadership, and not everyone did well at it because some people just wanted to get there because it paid more and they had no other options. What's nice with technical fields, like with data analytics, is that you can continue to advance and move forward without having necessarily to go into leadership, though that is a route that will still pay you well. So it's just interesting.
Yeah, and you've really experienced some of the spectrum of being an individual contributor, including expanding, as you noted, into being a consultant and co-founding a firm. Tell me a little bit more about that. That's a super interesting career path.
Yeah, it's been really exciting. So I've always wanted to work for myself. And for most of my like professional life, I've had some sort of side hustle business. I had a little like moving business for a period where I would do small hauls, and I did that for a couple of years, actually. That kept me afloat while I was an educator, actually. During COVID, I had like a dropship clothing company. And so I've just experimented with different things. I've had an Etsy shop. And with the consultancy, I've had it like in my mind what I wanted to do with it for maybe the last 6+ months. And on LinkedIn, I met Alex. I saw him around the space, people engaging on other people's content, and just checked out his profile and saw that he had this thing he was trying to build, control analytics, still in its infancy. But I reached out to him and originally I just want to poke his brain. Hey, I want to hear about what you're doing because I want to do something very similar. Like I even saw his website and I was like, wow, this is like the exact vision that I had. Turns out he lived in Phoenix, like I mentioned earlier. We met for beers and we got to talking and we were talking more and more, like talking online. And eventually it just came up, hey, let's do this thing together. And he originally pitched to me to just work as like a subcontractor for him if they ever need extra help. But then we were just talking more and more, like became genuine friends. And I pitched to him like, hey, honestly, I would love to build this with you. This is the exact vision for the kind of consultancy I want to build. He had only been working with one client at the time. This is very new, but he was all for it. And we worked out an agreement, felt really good about it, really trusted our gut with each other. And so I joined as a late co-founder just this last December. Since then, we've been working with two more clients. So we have three companies we're working with right now. And it's cool. It's really cool to do. And so the vision is obviously for it to grow, but I've learned a lot working with him too. I think if I was going to do it myself, it'd probably be a longer ways off. I just didn't feel quite ready to do something like that all by myself. but each of us bring a lot to the table where we're really able to complement each other with our skill sets. And that's really important with a business partnership. If you have the exact same skill set, it's not always a good fit. There's even someone last year I wanted to work with in some capacity doing something similar. And we're great friends, still are, but we have the exact same skill set and experience. And we just agreed, like, we might not be the best partners. Maybe we can partner in something else later on. Maybe a consultancy is just not it. So it's been cool to be a part of that. And it's probably one of the bigger things that I've done entrepreneurial, and I'm excited to see it grow. And I think having a partner is one of the things that has allowed it to, we still have a long ways to go, but grow at the rate it has grown. Still small, but I think, you know, we've done some cool stuff in just a couple months, and we're getting ready for a relaunch in the next month or two, updating a lot of our branding and website. And I'll be talking a lot more about it on LinkedIn, especially once we do like the official relaunch. Most of the clients we've worked with up to this point have been through word of mouth. But yeah, it's a bit of a long-winded answer, but that's how it formed, and super excited about it. And I love what we're doing. I love Alex. He's an incredible guy. So yeah.
What's the name of your consultancy? You said it, but I missed it.
It's Control Analytics. So control, like a control key on a keyboard. So CTRL Analytics.
Got it. That's cool. And what's your co-founder's name?
His name is Alex Von Wright.
Okay.
Yeah. And yeah, it's a Power BI consultancy, first and foremost, just working on report automations and helping people to just build out business intelligence for their company, get out of Excel and things like that, and into more advanced and automated reports and dashboards.
Even though it's new, who would you say is your target customer? Somebody where if they explain their situation to you, in the back of your head, you'd be like, this is a layup. We're a perfect match to help this person.
Honestly, that's something we're still trying to figure out, like who our target ICP is. We think probably finance firms or like marketing firms, these small to mid-sized companies that maybe don't have direct analytics teams, or if they do, like just more financial data. We both have a background in finance, Alex more so than me, but that's been the profile of the clients we've worked with so far, and they really needed our help. Again, we're still pretty young, so we're still trying to figure out who that ideal business to work with, that ideal client would be, but that's what we're thinking so far, but still figuring it out.
I love that you're niching down on an industry. When I've hired consultants in the past for various companies, specifically financial services, I typically did work with either teams from large consultancies like PwC, McKinsey, who specialized in financial services, or in with consultant firms that all they did was specialize in our niche, which was helpful because then there's a few benefits. One, they understand your problem set. And if you're in a regulated industry like finance, there's a lot of nuance and context that needs to be accounted for at both the federal and the state level, depending on what kind of finance you're doing. But then also you get the benefit of their experience with other firms. For me, it was really helpful to ask them like, okay, this is our strategy that we're thinking about. Are we weird? Or is this kind of what other people are doing? Like they couldn't tell you the names. Hey, Wells Fargo's doing this, but you knew who they worked with. And they'd be like, yeah, what we're seeing in the industry is these three different approaches, which was super helpful to me as somebody who was paying for them, but was also accountable for getting results. Very helpful.
Yeah. And what is it they say? The riches are in the niches.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So it is important to figure out like who your ideal client is and to kind of market towards that rather than just being super general and broad. Like we just help everyone with Power BI. And we've learned too, which has been really interesting because some of the clients we have talked to or worked with or the businesses, they don't always know what Power BI is. There's a level of education that has to happen. So even a lot of our copy has been more not, hey, we're like the Power BI guys, but leaning more into what we'll actually accomplish, report automation kind of thing. And then Power BI is just like the tool we use to achieve that. We're not just saying, hey, we'll help you with Power BI. It's great. Because if people don't know what Power BI is, they're instantly going to look past us. So even though it is a Power BI consultancy, that's not like what we lead with necessarily, because there's education that has to go on. Not every company knows what that is. So that's been really interesting to learn and think about, because I would have never thought about that before. You just assume, like in this space, oh, everyone knows what Power BI is, right? But these companies that aren't, that don't use those tools, or the smaller companies, or they don't have data teams, or whatever it is, like it could be any number of things, just might not know what Power BI is. Or if they've heard of it, they have no idea what it actually does if they've never used it. So it's interesting. Again, yeah.
And why Power BI? So you're niching down not only in the industries, which is super smart, in my opinion, but also on the technology. Tell me about that decision.
Yeah, it really came mainly because it's just what we're most experienced in. Alex, especially, most of his career has been with Power BI. I've worked with Tableau as well. So I do understand that tool and that side of things, but I've worked more with Power BI, really love the tool. So it came down to if we are going to niche down, let's pick a tool that we're most comfortable with. And we both really love Power BI. So because I know Tableau, there's an idea of maybe in the future, if it comes up, like broadening to Tableau and Power BI, like offering both services. But for right now, we're just focused on Power BI because there's, for us as a business, there's still a learning curve of setting up these integrations, like for other companies. And we may even have to build APIs and stuff like that. Like that, there's bridges we're crossing with one client in particular. And so if we're doing that with two tools at once, trying to figure out the logistics, that might be a little tough. So Tableau is like a maybe for the future, because again, like if you're internally, like our niche is Power BI, but we're trying to market the result rather than just the tool. So it could very easily be Power BI and Tableau someday. But we also, just even in our content, because we both create content, we want to build authority as Power BI experts as well. And it's easier to do that with one tool over two. I guess if you're trying to be an authority in like data visualization, you can be broad. But we're not necessarily targeting that specifically, but more so the back end in addition. But yeah, we just want to go all in on Power BI right now. So that's the thought process behind it. We feel really good about it.
That makes a lot of sense with why Power BI. And one of the things I've learned is when I first started as a data analyst or got into the industry, I was heavily focused on tools, which there's definitely some benefits to that, but it's a little short-sighted in that tools are like the last mile. If we're Amazon and we've got some order, it's going to come from the warehouse and there's all these logistics and sellers and everything, and then arguing or like hyper-focusing on a tool is like the difference between Amazon using a Dodge truck or a Ford truck. It's still getting delivered. It's just, which truck are you using? But there's some common principles regardless of whatever tool you're using. Niching down on the tool is super smart and makes you experts in it. But regardless of which tool you use, what are some of your design principles that kind of hold true no matter which client you're working with or which tool you're using that you find make effective data visualization?
Great question. And as a business, probably something we're still figuring out. But I know for me personally, I think going towards like the minimal, like everything in the dashboard of the report having a function, keeping it as minimal as possible, letting it breathe. I really love the design side of dashboards, especially. Obviously, I'm not like a UX, UI guy, but I've always found that really appealing and fascinating. But yeah, it's easy, like when you get a data set, to just spit out a bunch of charts that seem like they would be good or they work. But when we really try to understand what they're going to be using the data for, okay, once you have this report and you have these charts, like what is this meant to inform? What decisions are these meant to inform? It helps you to have more direction in how you're choosing the right charts to use, or just the layout of the dashboard itself. Like, it comes a lot from understanding what the client needs are. And they'll usually tell you like what they want to see. These are the metrics we want to see. So that's not the hard part. But a dashboard is useless if it doesn't meet the requirements of what it's intended for. So not sure if that 100% answers your question, but we definitely have it. But just our value system is we want it to be as simple and effective as possible. Yeah, just keeping it there.
And I think that's great. It sounds like you begin with the client's need in mind, like their ultimate why, what their desired future state is. You collect some data around what their key metrics are that align with that why, that information, but you're then designing with those things in mind of, okay, at the end of the day, their desired future state is to be able to easily make XYZ decision. They feel like this information is most pertinent to them. Let's create something that's functionally focused on exactly that objective and reduce as much noise as possible.
Yeah. And I think one advantage we even have as a smaller consultancy is sometimes agencies or different firms, when they're much bigger, there's a lot of like fat, meaning like a lot of red tape, boilerplate stuff, different people you got to talk with, account managers, like whatever it is, and different lines of paperwork. But with us, we're the developers and the owners. Like, we're like the points of contact where we're making the business decisions, but we're also making the product. So there's a lot of simplicity in that. That's one thing we're really trying to lean into, is we're just trying to keep it as simple as possible. We're going to get this done a lot faster than a bigger company might, but we're also going to do it right. Like, we're going to really make sure we understand what is needed, what is being expected, and we're going to nail it. So it's not all about doing it quickly. It has to be good. But that's something we're trying to lean into, because we've even worked with, because like our full-time jobs in the past, where it's like a big headache sometimes, like how much you got to go round and round to make decisions. And so having had that experience of even working with consulting firms in the past, it's helped us to understand the strengths that we have now, but also the direction we want to continue to move in.
Being small and little A agile, it can be a big advantage, especially for the small and medium-sized businesses that you identified as part of your target market. What are some of the biggest issues that clients you're seeing or that you've seen in previous roles run into when they're trying to work with data analytics, or they're trying to optimize their reporting or their monitoring? What are some of those pitfalls that you see?
Another good question. Sometimes it is a lack of understanding around the tech stack or the desired tech stack. So like, for instance, a client we just started working with, their goal has actually been to get some stuff out of Tableau and into Power BI, but they're not as educated on how Power BI works. So this is different than what I was saying before. This is a company that does know what Power BI is. And again, like most of our clients up to this point have been word of mouth, but when my connection like heard that, oh, it's like a Power BI consultancy. Oh, great. Like, we have this Power BI initiative and we don't really understand the tool. So it fit in really nicely there. So sometimes it is that lack of understanding around the tool itself, the product itself. But I think too, sometimes people are also still learning like how to make sense of their data, and maybe they haven't been able to utilize the data they have to the extent that they'd like. And sometimes that is limitations with reporting, whether it's like, again, like it comes down to the tech stack, or they just like, they don't have the solutions they need to build the reports that they want. So like another client we're working with, that's what it's been, is they've just been really limited in what they're able to do, and tons of manual effort involved. And even in my like most recent contract, they had reports in Excel that were so big, they would crash half the time when you opened them. They would take hours to refresh every week. Like they would have to refresh the report 9 times a month for every bill cycle, but it would take like almost 2 hours to refresh. And it was all in Access databases and stuff like that. So like I built a SQL script that just pulled the data in a single query that was connected to a Power BI report. And so it saved like hundreds of hours. And so that's a limitation too, is people just do a ton of manual effort because they just don't know. They don't know what else like the alternatives could be.
Yeah, I think you see that a lot with legacy companies who grew quickly. Especially you mentioning Access databases, that's where I've seen it in financial service. Okay. They started on an Access database, but then they grew, and then the Access reliance became so big that then it was a huge lift to move it to something more sustainable. So that can be a big issue. Sometimes it's easier to work with a newer company who doesn't have all that baggage to just get them off on the right foot to begin with.
Sure.
What would you say is critical for businesses to think about in regards to important data analytics trends, AI, data visualization in 2024? What do you think, if you could give business executives advice around, hey, in 2024, I think this is something we should all be watching for. What do you think a couple of those things might be?
I think doubling down on data teams, honestly. AI is here and it's not going anywhere. So it's something that should be embraced, really. And this goes beyond like business executives, but too, there's a lot of fear in our industry around AI taking jobs. And I can say, and many others say with me, including business executives, AI is not replacing anyone anytime soon. It might replace certain things soon, like kind of the, what's it called? I don't know, just like more surface level stuff. But I've seen AI become a tool similar to Google, but more like a personal assistant. And it can just carry a lot of the load of like discovery or minute tasks. I know you've done some really cool stuff with AI in your company or in your work. I'd love to hear about that. But yeah, I think with the rise of AI, the need for data interpreters is only going to grow. I think it's something businesses should double down on. And because AI is so cutting edge, I think learning how to adapt to it and use it as quickly as possible is going to help businesses to stay on the cutting edge. And I'd love to see like our company to find ways to embrace it. Yeah, I'd love to flip that question back on you and ask your thoughts on the answer to that question too, because I think you have some good insight there.
Yeah, even last year, I presented to a couple boards of directors for some Fortune 100 companies, and the theme last year already was, how are we going to integrate AI into our business strategy? It wasn't should we, it was how are we going to do this? So AI is being looked at heavily. ASU, where I'm senior director of analytics, we are the first educational institution to sign an agreement and a partnership with OpenAI.
Wow.
So we're kicking that off and looking for ways to optimize student success and minimize administrative overhead and look for ways to be innovative to continue to evolve. But for data analysts, to your point of will it take our jobs, Scott Galloway, professor at NYU Stern, says that AI won't take your job. Somebody who knows how to use AI will take your job. For us, things like data governance, being able to use AI to get in there and automatically categorize your data and help you clean up your data quality, build data contracts. There's already AI companies who can do that and clean up a lot of the lineage, which is going to be important for building AI on top of the existing stack. And like you said, as an analyst, I think that because we've seen price compression, and as Meta says, the age of efficiency, meaning like we're not spending money unless it's going to grow, I've seen a lot of upskilling. I personally am upskilling my data analysts into machine learning. I've got these great folks on my teams, and now I've got some AI tools, which makes it really easy for them to actually run some more robust predictive models, where before the technological blockade of, hey, you need to learn Python, and now we need to put some DevOps on top of this to make sure we monitor model drift, that's been reduced a lot. So taking a senior data analyst and enabling them with the ability to run robust machine learning by using some of these AI tools, I think will be a huge win for data, but also for the companies, because they have the need, but they may not have the budget to hire a team of data scientists, but they've got these great data people that are already working for them and already interested in getting some of those experiences. I think that's coming our way as well.
Wow, that's incredible. And that's really cool that ASU is the first educational institution to sign a contract with OpenAI. So you said?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Big announcement. So in February, we have to submit case studies for, okay, we've signed the agreement and it's coming. We've got the enterprise version, which is takes a data privacy and all of that into account. Okay, how are we going to do this? Now rubber needs to meet the road. What are the most effective and innovative projects that can drive student outcomes and build the community? Let's get those going. So that'll be exciting to see.
That's awesome.
What are your thoughts on how AI can optimize your workflow as a consultant? What ways are you using it, if you are, or what ways would you like to use it?
Some of the ways that we've used it currently is, so it helps us to problem solve. And for us so far, it's just been like talking to ChatGPT for certain things. We're in the process of trying to build an API, and ChatGPT is helping us kind of with the technical side of walking through that. Because it's not something we've done before, but we feel pretty good about the solution that we're working towards. So it's like having another employee. Like even when I use ChatGPT for like my creator business or like content creation, I look at it as like having a personal assistant with certain things, especially ideation. I think we're definitely going to be keeping an eye out for ways that we can continue to utilize AI in our work. 70% of the work is usually like establishing the connection to a data source and working with AI to help streamline that in some way would be pretty great. Yeah.
And Power BI, Microsoft is deeply partnered with OpenAI, and I believe they own or have access to all the intellectual property. Hmm. And they've rolled out some updates to Power BI. Are you seeing any changes there? I think they've got like the Azure machine learning stuff built into Power BI. I'm currently not using Power BI, so I haven't kept up with it, but are you seeing any changes there in that program?
So I honestly haven't worked with too many of the updates of that nature, so I can't really speak to that too much. Just isn't something I've needed to dig into up to this point.
Yeah, with Fabric, it was interesting to me when they've launched all the big Fabric updates that they changed the name from data modeling to semantic layer. I'm like, okay, they're building for scale and longevity, and they're trying to shift how they're being looked at, which makes a lot of sense, being that semantic layer has finally hit the common understanding in the data world. I doubt many business people are familiar with what a semantic layer is.
But yeah,
I think it bridges that gap between the data and the business definitions.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think, like, to our point earlier, is sometimes leaning too much into the technical terms can work against you a little bit. So I can see that being a smart move to broaden some of the language a bit.
Wonderful. I'll leave you with the last word, Mike. What is one thing that you feel like is most important for people to know about you and your work?
Oh, I wasn't expecting that question. One thing that's most important for people to know about me and my work. I try really hard to be a very transparent person. So I bring this into my relationships with people, into my public persona, if you want to call it, just being transparent, and try to bring into my work, business, whatever it may be, is just being transparent with wherever we're at, with whatever we're doing, and delivering exactly what needs to be delivered, because that's a minimum, right? The minimum is like meeting the expectations, right? And then a good job is going above those expectations. But yeah, I don't know. I think that's really important to me, honesty and transparency. For whatever faults I have, I really pride myself on being a honest and open person. So
that's ask for better qualities in a person or in a business partner. Where can people find you?
So LinkedIn is where I spend the most time. It's the only platform I'm really on other than YouTube. LinkedIn, YouTube, started a channel late last year. That's been a really fun endeavor too. LinkedIn is a pretty great hub for anyone who wants to know anything about me, work with me in any kind of capacity, see what I do. LinkedIn, Matt Mike.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for your time today, Matt.
Thanks, Andrew. It was awesome being on. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. I'll talk to you later.
See ya.